Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Shahid Omar of Roanoke, Virginia, a longtime advocate and founder of All Inmate Lives Matter, Inc., is going to be back with us today to talk more on the injustices in the penal system, the talents of the incarcerated who deserve credit, and the upcoming demonstration on behalf of prisoners. Shahid has been an advocate for quite a few years, and I feel honored to know him. I've been networking with prisoner advocates across the country, and as they say, united we stand, divided we fall. Shahid has been active in a lot of prisoner advocacy work. He also has his master's in criminal justice. So he's going to be talking today with us on these, on some of these issues, and also on a demonstration he previously held and how that went. We should have him calling in a few minutes, so we'll give it a few minutes to have him come in. I also want to bring up, there's been a lot of discussion on the free phone calls for prisoners, especially since this coronavirus. And I think it's very important that everyone get involved on this, especially if you have loved ones incarcerated, or even if you're an advocate. These prisoners have been detained in their cells since the coronavirus for 22 and 23 hours a day. We know that even the children in school, they're trying to get them back in the schools because the kids are going crazy being in the house so much. And here we are, we're able to go from room to room. We're able to do a lot of the things, even though a lot of us complain that we are confined to the homes. These prisoners are confined to a small cage. And this cage is not where anyone wants to be. But if they have to be in 22 and 23 hours a day, and they want to be able to at least call their family members when they do have time out, then it should be. The only thing is, a lot of families now are finding it very costly because of the prices that they charge for these phone calls. It's usually, I believe, $1.80, at least in some places, $1.80, and that is for 20 minutes. So if you have a loved one calling you 7 days a week, even if it's just that one time for that 20 minutes, that's like $14 a week. And if you double that and make it into the month, you're paying quite a bit of money. And a lot of parents, a lot of family members, a lot of loved ones out there, even advocates, are complaining because this is becoming costly to the families. Prisoners are not allowed to see their families because of this separation. The prisons, of course, everyone knows, the prisons have been on suspension for the visitors. And so, unfortunately, family members and loved ones have not been able to, and friends have not been able to see their loved ones or their friends in the incarceration. So right now, there's a lot of things going on around the phone calls and around even emails, because they're not even allowed. For a minute there, they had emails for free twice a week, and that was only for a short time. That has since been stopped as well. So we have prisoners that are confined 22, 23 hours a day. We have prisoners who cannot even email because a lot of them are indigent. And regardless of what people think when it comes to prisoners having it made, that's not the truth. That's what you're led to believe. And unfortunately, I have to admit, the prison officials do lie. I've been advocating for the past 20 years, and we were advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth nationwide. So I've been hearing this for years and years and years. But the thing is, now it's gotten to the point where people are suffering and people in the community are not aware of all of this. So we just want to make sure that everyone knows and to see if we can start doing something about this 383. What's happening right now is Shahid Omar apparently did not follow the instructions to come on, and he's wondering what's going on. So let's see if he calls in now. I just sent him the number. But yes, again, we really have to consider what's going on with these prisoners. They are human beings. They have made their mistakes. And regardless of what the public thinks about these individuals, again, they are human beings. They're someone's son. They're someone's daughter. They're someone's husband or wife. There's someone's cousin or aunt or uncle or whatever the case may be. So we want to look at these individuals not as prisoners, and let's not stereotype, because every situation is different. There are people out there, and I'm sure you might be one of them, who has a loved one that's in some kind of a mental health facility or someone that's in a substance abuse facility. They haven't made it to prison yet because they've been lucky. I should say they've been blessed. But what happens if they have an incident while they're out in the community with that mental health illness issue or the substance abuse issue? What happens then? They end up in prison. So we're going to be talking about a lot of these things. But right now, Shahid Omar, again, is with us this time. We had a problem last time, unfortunately, because there was no sound on my end. So now we have the sound and we have the guest. Shahid, are you on with us?
Hey, yes, ma'am.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing good. Shahid, I'm really sorry about what happened last time on the radio show, but we have you now, we have your voice, and we're honored to have you on. So I was talking a little bit about some of the issues that are going on, especially the free phone calls that people are now, the advocates and family members and others, are trying to do away with, the cost for the phone calls and also the emails. But I wanted to talk about the what you have been doing. I know that you have been in the criminal justice area for years. You have your master's in criminal justice. You've been putting on demonstrations. You've been advocating for prisoners. So let's hear from you now.
Yeah, Leona, I've been involved in this criminal justice system since 75. I came out of prison in 75 and went back into prison in 75 to do religious chaplaincy work at a place called Bland Farm. Since 75, I started going to school in 76, I think it was. I got married in 76. In 77, I started going to school. 85, I got a master's in criminal justice. And then while I was going to school, I worked full-time also in the field with an organization called TAP, T-A-P, which stands for Total Action Against Poverty. And we spin off a nonprofit agency. TAP was a nonprofit agency. But we also spin off a nonprofit agency called Virginia Cares, which was and still is a statewide pre- and post-release program in the state of Virginia. They are not as wealthy or extensive as they used to be during the later 70s and early 80s, because the money has been cut back. And, of course, now they don't call it transition to work. They call it reentry. But I consider myself an expert in reentry transitional service, because I worked in the field for many years. And like I said, we developed that program for inmates and ex-offenders. And back then, parole was in the system also. Parole has been abolished in Virginia since 95. But back at that time, we're talking about the later 70s and early 80s, parole was in the system. And so we would go into prison, identify all those inmates who were eligible for parole. We would have a 40-hour workshop with them, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, have a workshop with them, teaching them to get ready for the street. And then once they left the prison, made parole, they came to our agency, and we provided them with transportation, clothing, referral shelter, food, et cetera. And that was a statewide program. We went into every prison in Virginia, statewide, all over Virginia. And now they have a reentry program that the Department of Corrections is running, because we trained them. Unfortunately, we trained them, and after we trained them, the money got cut off from us, and the money started going to them. I told my boss, don't train the Department of Correction, because once we train them, we don't get no more money. She didn't believe me, but that's what happened. After we trained them to do reentry work, they stopped giving us the money, and they started doing reentry themselves. You know, so today that's what they're doing. They're doing reentry, which is what they call a reentry. And the problem is that the Department of Correction is director named Harold Clark. That's what he's doing. He's doing reentry work. And as opposed to being directing the prison system. And while he's doing reentry work, the prison system is going to hell.
You know, it's sad because I wanted to say, in Massachusetts, a lot of these programs, these workshops, everything that you're talking about, they're getting funding for it, right? In Virginia as well? But you know what they're doing?
I'm sorry, say that one more time. Say that one more time.
In Virginia, they're getting funding for these programs and these workshops, right?
Yeah.
In the prisons, in the Department of Corrections. Well, they're getting funding for that in Massachusetts, too. But what I'm seeing happening is they're recruiting volunteers to go in and do these programs while they're getting the funding. So they're not really paying for these people to come in. They're recruiting volunteers. What you had going
the Department of Corrections
was perfect.
The Department of Corrections in Virginia, they don't do that. They do their own, reentry work. They don't have no volunteer. They do their own reentry work. Counselors do it.
Okay, so they have counselors that do it. But what about some of the other things, the training? Even when you were talking about religion, they send emails around to people that are connected with the Department of Corrections asking for volunteers to go in. If they're Jehovah's Witnesses, volunteers to go in. If they're Muslims, to have the imam go in. If they're other religions, or even if it's some kind of workshop, some kind of training, they're looking for recruits. What I was going to say is the reentry that you had going, was it TAP? Again, TAP?
Yeah. It's called Virginia Cares.
Those kind of programs are programs that were working. And not only that, but prisoners or ex-offenders coming out trusted you because you weren't connected with the Department of Corrections. Now you say they took over, the Department of Corrections took over. And prisoners, first of all, do not trust people in the Department of Corrections. And so they're going to be fearful about participating in the – well, they can't come out until they do, most likely. But these are situations that the public needs to look at, too. Independent
Virginia, let me interrupt you. In Virginia, when you come out as a prisoner, you got 6 months on paper. So you have to participate. You ain't got no choice. You got 6 months on probation when you come out of the prison system in Virginia. Whether you make parole from the old system or you come out under the new system, you got 6 months to do on paper. So you have to participate in the program.
And that's on your program?
Right.
Or is that the programs that they have now in the prisons that you're talking about, they're mandated to take those programs as well?
They're mandated to participate in reentry program, and the probation officer decides what program they're going to participate in.
Okay, I understand now. So have you seen, when you had your program, did you see a lot of successes, the recidivism rate? How was it back then? Was it low then?
I don't remember what the numbers were, but Virginia right now, Virginia has the lowest recidivism rate in the nation. That's what they say. Whether or not that's true, I don't know because I don't deal with the numbers. But that's what they say. They have been awarded certificates for having the lowest recidivism rate in the whole state. That's what Virginia says. Now, when we were doing post-release, what they call pre- and post-release, I don't know what the recidivism rate was, but right now Virginia has the lowest recidivism rate in the state.
Wow, that is awesome. That is awesome.
I'm sorry. In the whole nation, Virginia has the lowest recidivism rate in the country.
Yeah. Jeez.
You know whether or not that's true? I don't know. But my problem with it is the director. Anybody who wants to verify what I'm saying can look it up on the Internet. Look up Harold Clark, being director of prison. He has written in an article, somebody interviewed him. Matter of fact, he used to be in Massachusetts. That's where you at, right?
Right. He was here. I met with him once.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I met with him when when he was on his way out to Virginia.
Okay. And he says, out of his own mouth, that reentry is his baby, is what he loves to do. And so while he says that, the directorship of the Virginia Department of Corrections is going to hell because he's doing reentry. And reentry is only a certain percentage of the job as being a director. And so that's what he's doing. He said that's what he loves to do, and that's what he's doing. My belief is that while he's doing that, while he's focused on reentry, prisons like Red Onion and Wallace Ridge Supermax prisons are beating inmates almost daily. And he ain't doing nothing about it because, again, his focus is on reentry. Now, how can he do that? He can do it because he's saving the state money. And that's why they hired him, because he could save the state money. And when you're talking to state legislators, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear money. And so he says that he can do that, and that's what he's doing, according to them. So that's what's going on. And my belief is he should be fired. And right now, one of the judges are looking at one of the prison facilities in Virginia because the virus has affected about 400 and some people in one prison. And if they're not dead, they're on their way to die. And so this one of the judges are real mad, real angry at this situation because he has ordered them to let these prisoners go. And they're not letting them go. They're not letting them go. So he's mad, and I'm getting ready to write him and let him know what Harold Clark is really doing, which is focusing on reentry while these prisoners are dying from this virus.
Well, you know, the same thing's going on in Massachusetts. They need to release a lot of these prisoners. But we have a governor that's totally one of these conservatives. You know, they're not about releasing, or they're taking their sweet time about it. And this is a major problem in Massachusetts as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the governor we got in Virginia, he's a Democrat. And my thing is that he is supposed to be about releasing these prisoners, but he's scared. And the reason why he's scared is because when he took over the office, when he became governor, they found some pictures of him dressed in black, trying to imitate Negroes. And so they raised that issue, and it became a controversy. And so right now, he's scared to raise any issues dealing with parole or any issues dealing with prisons because he's scared that once he brings those issues up, and the Republicans don't want nobody to talk about parole. So anybody in Virginia who starts a conversation about parole, the Republicans go crazy. And so my position is that he needs to bring back parole. What they're doing now, they have some bills that's being B-I-L-L-S, that's being submitted to the state legislators. And the bills, I said, they cut back on time that inmates have to do and release some of the inmates. Problem is they're not releasing any inmates who have violent crimes. So you take a man who has a robbery charge, robbed somebody, nobody got hurt. Robbery is a violent crime. He might be locked up 40 years, but because he's has committed a violent crime, he doesn't fit up under one of those bills. So he ain't never getting out of prison unless you bring back parole. Now, my belief is we need to bring back parole, real parole, not just some idea of parole, but real parole. And the reason why they're not talking about it right now is because the governor is scared. But I want to organize, and anybody who's listening who's in Virginia, if you are a family member of an inmate, I want to organize you into an organization of family members who has the right to vote. And with us having the right to vote, we can buy legislators. We can buy state legislators. When I say buy them, we can tell them what to do because we can either vote them in office or vote them out of office. And right now, there's no organization in Virginia that has that ability. And I believe we can organize one. So anybody who's listening from Virginia, contact me. My contact number is 540-309-2473. I want you to join an organization based up, organization made of family members of inmates, whether you be a wife, whether you be a brother, or uncle, a niece, or aunt, or a girlfriend, no matter. If you know an inmate that's in the system and you're some kin to him, call me. Again, 540-309-2473. And we want to organize a group that can tell state legislators how to vote.
And I hope people respond to that from Virginia, because this needs to be going around to all the states. Voting rights are very important. If you're a citizen of the United States, there's no reason, rhyme, or anything where anyone's voting rights should be taken away, regardless of what sentence they get, whether they're in the community, in prison, wherever it is. If they're a United States citizen, they should not have their vote. This is political bullshit, and that's just what they – and another thing – These people that are afraid to do anything, knowing that they're doing the right thing, but afraid to do anything because of backlash from anybody, should not be in office. And Donald Trump, a lot of people say he's crazy. But the thing is, Donald Trump doesn't seem to be afraid of anyone, and that's why he seems to be continuously going forward, and no one's able to stop him. He's like a bulldozer. And that's because he don't care. He's just doing his thing. We need people in leadership to do just the same thing. Instead of being cowards and being afraid, they're not going to be able to do this or this or this. They gotta forget about that. And people like Shahid Omar just said, this is a man who has had his master's degree in criminal justice, has been an advocate for years and years. Join him. Get involved with what he's doing, because he's making a difference. And with you joining forces with him, that difference is going to be made a lot faster and a lot bigger. That's all I have to
say. Well, let me tell you something, Leona. There are several organizations in Virginia, very well organized in Virginia. But what I found over the last 16 years, since 2004, one thing I found is that I'm the only individual, and now I have an organization. It's called All Inmates Lives Matter. And now I have an organization that's focused on inmates. Well, it has been focused on inmates since 2004, inmates that are being beat up. Now, a lot of organizations are focused on different things that happen to inmates, like telephone calls, parole, probation, et cetera. But nobody except me is focused on inmates that are being beat up. And the reason why I got involved in this was because of an inmate named Kevin Rashid Johnson, who I want to talk about today also. Anybody who's listening, you can Google Kevin Rashid Johnson. He's an author. He's also an artist. And when I say artist, I'm not talking about somebody who can just take a pencil and a piece of paper and draw some stuff. This man is a professional artist. You don't believe it? Google his name and Google his art. And I guarantee you, you'll see some art that ain't nobody in the country can match. I'm talking about a real artist. He's also an advocate. He got me involved in this advocacy job because he and my son were locked up together back in 2005. My son wrote me a letter and told me, said, Pops, you need to get in contact with this guy named Kevin Rashid Johnson. And I said, okay. So I wrote him a letter. And he sent me a letter, sent me a paper that's an autobiography, about 3 or 4 pages of his prior life to prison and his life in prison. And one of the things I found out about this individual, Kevin Rashid Johnson, the kind of guy that if he saw an inmate that was being abused by a correction officer, he would step up, step to the correction officers and protect the inmate, even if it meant violence, even if it meant some hand-to-hand combat, he would protect the inmate. But more than that, One of the things I found out when I contacted him, so he had a page on the internet. And you could probably go on there and find the same pages now. Look up prison called Red Onion and Wallace Ridge. He had every inmate in the prison who had been abused by correction officer, inmate's name, inmate's number, the correctional officer that abused him, how and why the correctional officer abused him, the date, the time, and what was the abuse. He had all this listed. I pulled this stuff down off the internet, and I began to write these inmates and let them know that I was joining forces with Kevin Rashid Johnson, but I was on the outside while he was on the inside, and I could help them. So they began to write me. What I did, when I got their letter, I would enclose it in another envelope, and I would write a letter to the governor, to the corrections director, the FBI, some celebrities, whoever I thought that would listen. And I would send their letter with my letter in an envelope to people. And I was able to do this because I had people to step forward and help me. One guy, Abdul Shakir, out of Lynchburg, Virginia, he bought me computers, printing machines, bought me stamps, bought me envelopes. I mean, he spent his money to help me. And even today, I have another brother named Fahim. Fahim, he's a computer technology expert. More than that, he develops systems protecting federal agencies and other agencies, people who are trying to hurt them. He develops systems for them. He makes good money. He'll call me every other week, ask me what I need, and if I need anything, he'll go to the post office and buy me $200 worth of stamps or envelopes, anything I need. And so I'm blessed because I can write and I can send letters to people without having to come out of my own pocket. I can send letters. And they're surprised because I can write also. And so I send the inmate's name. I'm sorry, not the inmate's name, but the inmate's letter with my letter to the governor, again, to the director of the Department of Corrections, FBI, or anybody who will listen. And I get some response. I get some response. And I'm going to get more response now because I have an organization. You know, in this world, in America, when you speak, and you speak as an individual, people don't have to listen to you. But when you have an organization, and you speak from an organization level, people have to listen to you. And you'll find people like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Farrakhan, all those people who are advocates for whatever they're advocating for, they all are backed by organizations, and that's why people listen to them. When I write a letter as Shahid Omar, who the hell is he? He ain't nobody. He ain't got no organization behind him. But now I got an organization behind me, so they have to listen.
I'm glad you mentioned that because this is sometimes, you know, when people know you have an organization, they think that you're bragging about it or something. It's not about bragging. When you try to get recruits and you say, come, you know, try to join this organization. Oh, I'm not joining. That's all they want. They want to have their own organization. What you just said is true because you don't get respect as an individual, but as a group, as an organization. And we have too many people out there complaining about these organizations rather than joining them. And that's really sad. That's ignorance. And they think that because you say you have an organization, it's supposed to be bragging. Who wants to have an organization? I don't. It's a lot of headache for me, paperwork and everything else with the state. And yet, I have people who have actually talked about me because I have an organization. There's one that says all the time, and they have these organizations because they're making money. I've had an organization since 2004, and I have not gotten a penny because I have not asked for any money. Although I'm looking at it nowadays because something has to be done. But they don't realize people are doing it for a reason. not to be somebody important, but to make a difference. And the only way, if that's what it takes, is to have an organization, so be it.
Well, you can get a nonprofit organization. I was very fortunate because I've been working for nonprofits since 76. Been working for nonprofits since 76. And I've always rejected the idea of running the organization because I put
exactly.
out a lot of paperwork, and I don't want to do no paperwork. I want to be on the front line working with inmates or working with ex-inmates. That's where I wanted to be at. But over the years, I found that, especially when I moved to Atlanta, I moved to Atlanta in 90, and I stayed in Atlanta for 7 years. And I ran into three black folks that had organizations. And the organization that they had was very effective, but very efficient. And I came back home, you know, this year, 2020, this year, I decided I needed an organization. And I was fortunate enough to run into a few dollars, and I called these people, and they told me they could do a nonprofit agency if I paid them. Paid them straight up, and they working. They working. They got my paperwork done. You know, I got an IRS number, and I'm official. All inmates and lives and money. I'm official. And so when I get some letterheads, some envelopes, I got a board of directors, I got a president, I got a secretary, I got a treasurer, and I'm official. And so now when I write, these people got to listen to me. I want to tell you about an incident I had in Virginia back in probably 2006 or 7. I had been writing the director of the Virginia Department of Corrections at the time. Like I say, I was writing them with these inmates letters, informing them about inmates that are being abused, that were being abused up at Red Onion and Wallace Ridge. But I had never met this man. I was writing him for a whole year. And he wouldn't write me back. He wouldn't even acknowledge receipt of my letter. And professional people, that's what they do. If a person sends a professional person a letter, they will send a letter back and say, "Hey, Mr. Jones, I got your letter. Don't agree with you, or I do agree with you, or you can go to hell or whatever." But they will acknowledge receipt of your letter. I was writing the director of the Virginia Department of Corrections for a whole year. Never got a response. One day I was in Richmond, and I was in Richmond with two ladies, and we were down there talking about the price of telephone calls for inmates. And anybody who has an inmate family member locked up, they know what I'm talking about when you talk about the price of telephone calls. You can probably talk about that yourself. And so we were standing in the hallway, and one of the ladies says, "That go Gene Johnson right there." I said, "Where he at?" He was walking down the hall. Now, I had never met this man, but I had been writing this man. So when she called his name out and told me, "There he go," I took off running. He went into the bathroom. I took off running. I went into the bathroom. He was at the urinal, and I called his name out. I said, "Gene Johnson." He turned around, looked at me, said, "Who is that?" I said, "It's Shaheed Omar." He said, "Shaheed," I said, "Yeah, this is me. The man has been writing you for a whole year and never got a receipt of a letter from you, never responds." I said, "Here I am now." He said, "Oh," and let me tell you what this man did. This man said to me out of his mouth, he said, "Hey, do you know Kevin Rashid Johnson?" I said, "What?" I was baffled by the fact that here I'm standing in front of this man. I had been writing him for a whole year about inmates. Kevin Rashid Johnson was just one of those inmates I wrote him about. He asked me, without talking about anything else, he asked me, "Did I know this man?" And I told him, I said, "Yeah, I know him. I've been writing him about 30 days at that point." I said, "Yeah, I know him." And he said, "He's a mess. Just don't mess with him." That's what he said. So then he asked me, he said, what about your son? Where your son at? I said, my son has been transferred from Red Onion down in Eastern Virginia. So he says, how is he doing? I said, I don't know. I said, he's doing pretty good. I said, but I can't visit him. He said, why not? I said, because people at Red Onion wrote me a letter and told me that I had cursed their officers out and threatened their officers. So he prohibited me from visiting my son for a whole year. He said, well, is your son still at Red Onion? I said, no, sir. He said, well, they can't do it then. I said, well, they doing it. He said, well, I can handle that. He said, here's the deal. I'm going to make a deal with you. I'm listening to him. Listen to this. He says, I'm going to give you my personal cell phone number if you agree not to threaten any more of my staff. And where he got that from was an inmate would write me and tell me about an officer that had abused him. I would write the officer, and I would tell the officer, if this was my child that you put your hands on, I said, I would put my hands on you. I said, but you're fortunate because this is not my child. This is just another Muslim or another inmate. He's no kin to me. I said, but I'm going to write the governor. I'm going to write the FBI, and I'm going to tell him about you abusing this inmate. But Gene Johnson told me, he said, I'm going to give you my personal telephone number if you agree not to threaten any more of my officers. And if you have any problems with inmates, you can call me directly. Man, I felt like $1 million because here I got the director's telephone number, personal cell phone number. And you got people in it. You got people that work for the Virginia Department of Correction that didn't have the director's telephone number. I had his personal telephone number. So I felt like $1 million. Walked out that bathroom, walked back to the people that I come down there with, told them what happened, they leave. Well, I got back to Roanoke. Got back home. The next weekend, I went down to see my son. I got to see him on a Sunday. When I got to the prison, he told me that my son was in solitary confinement and he couldn't be seen but on a Wednesday. This was on a Sunday. I called Gene Johnson on his personal cell phone number. Remember, Gene Johnson, director of prison. I went outside, got my telephone number, I called him. He told me, he said, where you at? I told him where I was. He said, leave me on the telephone, go back inside, and give the people the telephone, and let me talk to them. I went back inside the prison, the telephone in my hand, back in the visiting room, the telephone in my hand. I told the lady sitting at the desk, I said, your boss is on the telephone. He want to talk to you. She said, my boss? I said, yeah, your boss. His name is Gene Johnson. She said, yeah, it's my boss. She said, but how is he on the telephone? I said, well, he's on my telephone. He want to talk to you. I gave her the telephone. And they had a conversation. When she got off the telephone, she looked at me like, I don't know who you are, but you got my boss's telephone number, so you must be somebody important. And she said, you can visit your son. And she said, take your telephone, put in the car, and you can visit your son. And this was on a Sunday. My son was in solitary confinement. You couldn't see him till on a Wednesday. I'm visiting him on a Sunday. I'm a serving power. But one of the things I found out, Leona, was that nothing changed. When I wrote Gene Johnson about these other inmates at Red Onion, Wilder's Ridge, he still never responded. So what he was trying to do was co-opt me. Co-opt means that you take and hire me or use me as a part of your thing, and what I really want to do, you ain't going to do it because you're offering me something. So these inmates that I was writing him about, he still never responded about them. So I sent his telephone number back to him. And I told him, I said, now, and he told me, he said, what I had planned to do was help you with your son. I said, no, that's not what I need. I said, I need help with these inmates at Red Onion Wallace, where the racist correctional officer putting their hands on. That's what I need. And if you can't help me with them, I don't need your help. I don't need your telephone number. So here's your telephone number back. I gave his telephone number back. That was in 2010, I think that was. And Harold Clark was coming in the office at that time, November the 8th, I think that's when they hired him. And he wrote me a letter. As soon as he got in the office, and told me he would not be responding to any of my letters. Well, that's true. He never has responded to any of my letters. but now I have an organization now, and so I believe he will respond, because I'm going to have an organization that will eventually have members who pay money, and we can hire people, we can hire state legislators, we can vote them in office or vote them out of office, and we can tell governors what to do, because we will have an organization that be that strong. You know, if Virginia has 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 inmates, whatever they got, and you have an organization that's made up of a family member of each inmate, can you imagine the power that you have? If you have 3,000 people that's members of your organization, can you imagine the power that you have? And that's what I plan to do with an organization that I'm going to develop. And I'm not talking about the All Inmate Lives Matter organization, but another organization made up of prison inmates, family members.
Well, you know, the thing is, I will say one thing about prisoners, and it's sad because there's a lot of prisoners that need to get involved, but they're so right now they're not allowing people in the prisons yet per se, but yet prisoners are getting high on drugs and everything else. So where are they getting it from? First of all, where are these substances and these drugs coming from, if not from the staff? Secondly, a lot of these prisoners, I mean, I've tried this. I've tried to get more prisoners involved. But the thing is, a lot of these prisoners are about nothing. I mean, they want it. They don't care. While other prisoners are struggling to try to get them to work with the advocates, some of them do not want to even bother. So we need to work. We need to look at who we can actually recruit to work with us, because there are a lot of prisoners.
That's correct. That's correct. We have an organization in Virginia. They're not in Virginia, out of Kentucky. And they have a radio program, and it's called Holler to the Hood. They come on every Monday night, where there's a radio program, again, out of Kentucky, and it comes over in Virginia. And it's called Holler to the Hood. And you can call this number, Holler to the Hood. You can Google it on the Internet, called Holler to the Hood. And you can call and speak to an inmate. Now, I don't mean you can speak to them directly, but whatever you say on the radio during this time from 7 to 9 or 8 to 9 on a Monday night, inmates are going to hear it. Call Holler to the Hood. And one of the things that I talk about when I call the radio program, I talk about the gang members who are in the prison, because we have gang members in Virginia who work with correctional officers. Yeah, they will beat you up for a cigarette, for a joint of reefer, for an extra piece of meat, or extra piece of bread, but beat another inmate up, because the officer would call the inmate a snitcher, files a grievance against an officer. The officer would tell a gang member that he's a snitcher because he filed a grievance against the correction officer. But correction officer beat him up, or didn't give him his food, or didn't give him a shower, or didn't give him his recreation. He would call him a snitcher.
And I believe
the,
that.
The officer
we got cowards.
If you go beat,
There are cowards in the in the prison system. There are cowards overseeing the prisoners. They choose to side with the gang members, first of all, because they're petrified of those gang members and those people. Secondly, like you say, they use them to go against their own fellow prisoners whenever they feel like they don't like a person or they want to make trouble for that person. Those guards are cowards. They don't go after the ones that can outdo them. They go after the ones that are doing nothing. I don't know.
That's
we have some cowards overseeing prisoners.
Well, when I called a radio station on a Monday night, I talk about them. I talk about the gang members. I talk about what they're doing, what they're supposed to be doing. Some inmates don't like that. They'll tell me to stop talking about the gang members. I don't care nothing about them. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not worried about them. I don't care nothing about them. I tell them, if you're working with a correction officer and you'll beat up another inmate, then you're a coward. You beat up another inmate for a cigarette or for a joint of reefer or for an extra piece of bread because the correction officer called him a snitcher. because he filed a grievance against the correctional officer, and you're a coward. And they do it. I mean, they beat up an inmate. They'll jump on an inmate.
Uh-huh.
They'll jump on an inmate. We've been very fortunate because they won't jump on a Muslim. But they'll jump on other inmates, you know. And so that's a big problem of trying to get some inmates organized. We have some inmates who are organized, like Kevin Rashid Johnson. I want to talk about him because let me go over here to my computer, pull up some stuff on him. Because he needs to be talked about. He's the most abused inmate in the state of Virginia. And now he's involved in this program called Interstate Compact. The Interstate Compact means that they would transfer an inmate out of state for what he does in the state, political-wise. Yeah, transfer him out of state. Kevin Rashid Johnson has been in four different states. He's been in Florida. He's been in Oregon. He's been in, right now he's in Pendleton Correctional Facility. I can't even think of the state that he's in. But he's
What's
been
the name
in four different states. Pendleton Correctional.
Oh, Indiana. I think it's in Indiana.
Yeah,
one
Indiana,
of those
it
places.
It's in Indiana. So he's been in four different states. Because they keep him. But everywhere he goes, he does the same thing that he did in Virginia. He talks about the prison that he's in. He can write. He's written a book already since he's been in prison. And he can write very well. So when he can fight. You know, he's not one of these cowards. He can fight. He'll protect himself. So they trying to kill him. Matter of fact, he got an article now. This guy's on the internet. It's called Urgent Call to Action. Rashid says, "You're trying to kill me." They're trying to kill him. Justify. They're not trying to kill him without it being justified. So they're trying to kill him right now. But he's been fortunate enough not to give them any leeway in justifying killing him. So, you know, he'll abide by the rules and regulations. But they're trying to kill him because he's very strong in his advocacy work. Very strong. I'm going to read you a little bit. This guy writes, Shupavu Wa Karima. He says, "I just got off the phone with Rashid. He still has not received his property or the remainder of his life-sustaining medication. He hasn't had all of his medication since the incident where he was forced to defend himself. That occurred August 25th, 2020. This alone is enough. But what has me the most concerned is that he stated there are other recent developments in his current situation that he did not feel comfortable sharing with me over the phone. As he calls, I have them monitored and recorded. He did state emphatically that at this point, the Indiana Department of Corrections and the staff at Pendleton Correctional Facility are actively trying to kill him. These were his exact words. I'm fearful for the safety of my comrade and partner and am asking everyone to please call and email. The prison and correction staff must know that we are watching and there will be a serious consequence to pay should anything happen to Kevin Rashid Johnson. I wrote the governor, the head of the Department of Corrections. I wrote them people and told them about Kevin Rashid Johnson. I also wrote the director of Virginia Department of Corrections and the governor in Virginia because they are responsible for Kevin Rashid Johnson because he's still a Virginia inmate on paper. But even though he's in Indiana, he still belongs to Virginia, and they are responsible for his life. So they have him in a program. You know, the sad thing about this, Leona, this man was locked up for selling drugs. This man was locked up in 2000 and I forgot what year it was, but he was locked up for selling drugs. He wasn't locked up for killing nobody. He wasn't locked up for no violent crime. He was locked up for selling drugs. That was his problem. That was his case. He was locked up for selling drugs.
And he's been in for how long?
I believe it's 1990. It's in here or on here. Let me find out. Let me tell you exactly when he got locked up. But it's 1990. I mean, he was locked up for selling drugs. That's what it was. And I'm gonna give
ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I've been interviewing people from other countries, and they can't believe this country. They can't believe the harsh sentence. And there was someone that said they got 1,800 years in prison. Others are saying they got 3 life sentences, 4 life sentences. What kind of mentality is that? This is our government leaders. Where's the mindset? This is so much hatred in them, so much violence in them, so much ignorance. And they're up here giving these kind of sentences to people that are lucky if they live to be 80 or 90 years old. And they're giving 4 life
That's
sentences,
right.
3 life sentences. This is ridiculous. This is the kind of leadership we
yes,
have.
It's ridiculous. That's right. A man can't do but 1 life sentence. That's 20 years by itself, 1 life sentence. They're giving them 3 or 4 life sentences. You know, what a man
that
do
shows,
with 4 life sentences?
That shows the hatred
That's
in this country. That shows the hatred, the racism, everything that goes with it.
That's what it is. That's what it is. I'm trying to pull up his date when he first got locked up. I also want to talk about what I'm trying to find. I want to talk about what we've been doing as far as protesting. We go down to the federal where the federal judges are working at. It's called Richard Poff Building, P-O-F-F, Richard Poff Building, every Friday from 1 to 3. We go down there, and I say we because I have a partner who's the president of my organization, and a few other stragglers, they come down and help us. We go down there, he and I go down every Friday from 1 to 3, and we protest. We have signs that are made, protesting signs that are made. And the reason why we go down is because the judges are accountable for the life of a state inmate who's doing state time and federal time. But with these inmates in Virginia are state inmates, and they are doing time. The federal judges are responsible for the oversight. They are the people who do the oversight. And they have the ability to either help the inmate or deny the inmate any help. Because when inmates suit, it goes to the federal judges. And they have federal judges that are called magistrates, magistrate judge. They have one in Eastern Virginia and one in Western Virginia. The magistrate judge is the one that gets your federal suit when you file it. They have the ability to grant you all the claims that you file or the ability to deny you claims. For an example, if you say that the violent action from the correction officers was on tape, was on video, they can deny you access to that video when you have a trial. They can say to you that ain't nothing on the tape, even though you can tell them that there's something is on the tape. They can deny you access to that. And then the judge that you go before can overrule the magistrate and bring the tape in. Or the judge can go along with the magistrate and say they're not going to allow you to bring it in. And which one you think the judge going to do? The judge going to go against his magistrate partner or you. They're going to go with the magistrate. And so you're not going to be able to get the full effects of your case in court. You know, and plus you're going into court by yourself. You're not going in with a representative, with a lawyer, who's going to defend you. We have no pro bono lawyers in Virginia that's going to defend an inmate. If they can't get paid, they're not going to defend an inmate. You know, especially in a prison where the prison itself is 7 hours, 4 hours, where the lawyer lives at. The lawyer lives in Richmond, Virginia. Richmond is 3 hours from Roanoke, where I live at. He got another 3 hours to get to Red Onion or Wallace Ridge. That's 6-7 hours to even come see you. That means he got to pay for his transportation. He got to take a whole day to drive to come see you. Lawyer's not doing that. So you go in the courtroom without a lawyer. And what happens in most cases, the judge says to the inmate, why don't you take a settlement? He'll give you $3,000 to $4,000 to not even go in court. So you got a state inmate who you're going to give $3,000 to $4,000 to if he decides to not take his case to the courtroom. Which one you think inmate going to do? Inmate going to take his case to the courtroom, or inmate going to say, okay, I take that $3,000 to $4,000? More than likely, inmate going to take $3,000 to $4,000. What happens is that he doesn't know, the inmate doesn't know, that once he takes the settlement, he can't talk about the case no more. The settlement is an agreement to get to take this money and not talk about your case to nobody. You can't talk about your case to the court. You can't talk about your case to the jury. You can't, you're not going to have no jury. You're not going to have no judge. Your case is being settled out of court. You can't talk about the case to your family. You can't talk about the case to another inmate. You can't talk about the case to nobody because you sell it. You agreed to not talk about the case, and you took this $3,000 to $4,000. And what's going to happen is they're going to send you right back to the same prison in the same hallway, the same cell, around the same correction officer that you were in court with. And the correction officer is going to tell you, see what happened, Negro? See what happened? But you're going to beat you with some more. So he only got $3,000 to $4,000. But every day he wakes up, he's going to be looking at that white man, that racist, that jumped on him. He's going to be looking at him. And he's going to be scared. Same officer going to jump on him again. So we ask the inmate, we've got a thing going now. We ask the inmate, don't take no settlement. Don't take no settlement. Fight your case. Forget about the $3,000 to $4,000. Fight your case. Because if you fight your case, then the news media is going to talk about your case, and the public going to know. The public is going to know about your case, and the public, once the public knows about your case, then the public can respond. And I tell you, once the public sees these videos of inmates being beat up by racist correction officers, they're going to respond the same way the public responds to the police who kills a citizen. Once we know outside what's happening on the inside, we're going to respond. But if we don't know what's happening on the inside, we can't respond. And most people out here don't really believe that inmates are being beat up. They don't believe that because you don't see no evidence of it. These cop shows that they show, these prison programs that they have, they never show inmates being beat up. So the public doesn't know anything about it. You, a loved one, or you're a prisoner, and you write your loved one telling them that some officer beat you up, they don't have no evidence of this. They don't believe this. Why should they believe this?
Politicians know. This is what makes me upset. Politicians know. The Department of Corrections, the officials lied to them. They've caught them in lies. They've actually caught them in lies. That's why I said we've got some weak politicians that are too afraid to go up against them. Then you talk about lawyers. We've got lawyers that were afraid to go up against them. They've got a strong, powerful union. We need to defund the Department of Corrections. We need to defund law enforcement, because until we defund, these people are going to remain in power, and they're going to be just like our leadership is today. No one's going to be able to stop them. And like
yeah,
you say,
right.
These prisoners that are in there suffering, maybe the public don't believe it. They didn't believe that black lives were being wasted away like a game. But now they see it happening because it's come out so visible that they can't help but see it. They can't turn a blind eye because it's right there in front of them. This is what's happening in the prisons. And as soon as they start focusing on those prisons, they're going to see a lot of, even some of the prison employees coming forth, because there are prison employees that are aware of all this, that want to talk, and politicians know this, and they're still not going in to find out more about this. They don't want to find out the truth. They want to hold signs.
They don't want to find out because if they find out, they got to do something about it. They got to do something about it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to know about it. They know about it because they got to do something about it. I found, Leona, the paper that I was looking for on the Internet. It's in 1990. Kevin Rashid Johnson was a drug dealer and an ambitious member of America's Black Lupin Proletariat, or underclass. Like so many as a young adult, he was arrested and received a lengthy prison sentence. He's been incarcerated ever since 1990 now, for the past 18 years, in conditions of solitary confinement. So Rashid, and if anybody that don't know what a solitary confinement is, solitary confinement is being locked down in a cell 23 hours a day. Without any communication with other human beings, locked down in a cell for 23 hours a day. Rashid says, because I accepted my lifestyle and all of its consequences, I was always reluctant to involve my family or others on the outside of prison in my conflicts with the pigs. I dealt with my own problem directly. He says in 1993, Rashid was transferred to Greenville Prison. As he has written, listen to this. He says, what I was to encounter at Greenville defied anything that I'd expected. The pigs had a refined system and license for brutalizing prisoners. I was not to understand the magnitude of the situation until a few days after being there. The pigs had a tier of hand-picked proxy prisoners whom they used to violently suppress those who got out of line. The ringleader, I call him Pumpkin, was a career con with reputation for butchering other prisoners. He had a trustee job. All trustees were similarly selected. Pumpkin was allowed by the pigs to keep weapons on his person. Part of the mental terror game was that while he was out cleaning, everyone knew he was a pig hitman and stayed armed. The pigs would bring others out around him in handcuffs. Segregation prisoners must be handcuffed from behind when outside their cells, unless they have a trustee job or are locked inside an exercise yard or shower stall. The she pigs, guards, and nurses were the tools used to sick Pumpkin on others. He regarded and jealously guarded these she pigs like actual mates, whereas all they did for him was bring him bubblegum, watch him masturbate in their presence, and flirt with them. The setup game usually went like this. One of their she dogs would provoke an argument with the target, refuse him something he was due, etc. She then reported to Pumpkin that the target had disrespected her or any of many other claims. Pumpkin would then come to the target cell and start a hostile verbal exchange, send a challenge via third-party message, etc. Once the conflict was established, the pigs would move the target into the tier with Pumpkin and his cronies. The entire tier rode with him, thoroughly searched the target's property for weapons before moving him to ensure that he had no means of defense. Once assigned to his cell on Pumpkin's tier, the target was fair game. If he was stout-hearted, he'd stand his ground. The next day or so, the pigs would put them on the exercise yard together, remove everyone's handcuffs except the target's. They put 5 to 7 prisoners in each pen and allow them to mob attack the steel handcuffed target. Or, if they wanted him butchered, he'd be unhandcuffed and left to contend unarmed against a knife-wielding Pumpkin. Listen to this now. Rashid took the lead in organizing and waging war against Pumpkin and his goon squad, and the guards were given the orders to dole out abuse as well. Not only did this force Pumpkin's crew to back down and sue for peace, but it brought about some limited reforms at Greenville itself, though it also led to Rashid's being transferred again and to the beginning of what would be 18 years in segregation. 18 years, Leona, in segregation. On account of the systematic attacks on the pigs at the height of their abuses, Farmer Corrections Internal Affairs Office decided to get involved in investigating the years of prisoner complaints of brutality in the unit and their efforts to neutralize our responses to the Internal Affairs Unit ended up having a dozen pigs criminally prosecuted for brutality and using other prisoners to enter prisoner cells and attack them, once allowing a prisoner to use riot gear. Two pigs were ultimately convicted. Pumpkin was also prosecuted and convicted for an incident where the pigs opened another prisoner cell, allowing him to ambush him. The prisoner was stabbed multiple times. Pumpkin's trustee job was immediately terminated under the backlash of this incident. Several weeks later, I was transferred back to Mecklenburg Prison, returning to the scene of past abuses. This story goes on and on and on. You hear me? So during my stay at Mecklenburg, one of the ranking pigs who were instrumental in torturing me with the freezing strip cell treatment was ambushed. On this occasion, I'd been strapped to the bunk by the pigs in order for a prisoner to receive meals and toilet breaks. While strapped down, the pigs must come to his cell, remove the chains and straps, and handcuff him. They would leave the cell, close the door, and remove the cuffs through a hatch in the door. However, during this 1994 episode, when the pigs came in to release me for a toilet break, they claimed that I'd gotten out of the restraints. I was lying on the bunk on a blanket as though still strapped down. When the ranking pig and two others removed to lift the blanket, I allegedly rose up with weapon in hand and attacked two of them. Received multiple stab wounds, and the third pig received a cracked jaw. This incident, obvious pre-planning and execution, left the pigs in such a quandary that no retribution followed. Indeed, I was 7 days later transferred to Buckingham and quickly released the general population. This is the kind of lifestyle this brother has had since he's been locked up, since 1990, on a drug charge. Imagine this. Since 1990, he's been locked up on a drug charge. Since 1990. And there are many prisoners in the correction system all across the country that's been locked up for charges like this, for drug charges. You know, you got marijuana being legal in some states right now. And yet there are still prisoners locked up for selling marijuana. There are some prisoners doing life for selling marijuana. While marijuana is legal in some states, you still got some prisoners that are locked up for life sentences selling marijuana. Think about that, man. While marijuana is legal in some states. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
This Saturday, I'm going to be interviewing, his name is DJ Vodica. He's an ex-prison guard, and he's the author of The Green Wall out of California. He talks about the worst gang guards within the California Department of Corrections, and he said the members of the Green Wall placed contraband in the prisoners' cells, used the unnecessary force at will, and became middlemen for drug and weapons transfers within the prison. Some guards planted prisoner-manufactured weapons in prisoners' cells, falsified reports, and stole or destroyed property belonging to these prisoners. And he talks about a lot of the bloodshed. He talks about a lot of the things that have happened in the prisons in California. But it's not just California. As you say, it's in Virginia. It's happening all over the country. And they're being set up.
And in California, check this out. In California, there is an organization of correction officer gang members. In California, there is an organization of correctional officer gang members. And that's how corrupt California is. Have an organization made up of gang members, correction officers.
I would love to have you on with him because he speaks just of that. He speaks of the gang members in uniform. And he right now he said there's a lot of them would love to see him dead. So he's kind of like been hiding out. He's kind of like wearing all this gear, what do you call it, vest and everything else. This man, he put his life at risk. He disclosed, exposed everything, and he's all. You type in DJ Vodica, and you're going to see him all over the place for disclosing and exposing his peers. But it's exactly what you're talking about right now. People don't believe it, but when they go on the internet and they see these things, it's like drugs being brought into the prisons. If people type in the internet browsers, drugs brought in by guards, prison guards, or prison guards caught bringing in drugs, they're going to see all kinds of stuff about drugs being brought in by prison guards. But yet, they used to blame families and friends, and we hear all these things where families and friends have to be going through all these searches, when in fact it's not even them that, I mean, you might find one or two here and there, but most of these people bringing in the drugs are employees. And they're making money off these prisoners. And that's why they're keeping a lot of them, I believe, they're keeping a lot of them drugged up. Because as long as these people, these prisoners need that drug, they're going to do whatever the prison officials and guards want them to do.
Yeah, that's right. They will have no problem with prisoners being drugged up because the drugs will keep them quiet. The drugs will keep them from rebelling and dealing with the system. The drugs will keep them sedated. And they'll be happy, smiling, and sedated. And so they won't raise no issues with the prison or what they're doing to other inmates. The drugs will keep them sedated. And that's why they let it in.
And you brought up the fact about taking property. Listen, I know for a fact it happened to my loved one. Took his law books and gave it to the prison library. Still has his television. Have him on a block that he doesn't even belong on because he did nothing wrong except to file a lawsuit about a year and a half ago. And what they did, they put him in the hole, had the lawsuit dismissed about 8 months later, and then let him out of the hole once the lawsuit was dismissed. He had planned on having an appeal, and what happened in January was a prison riot where they, after they removed all the prisoners that started the riot, they went on an unprovoked attack on all prisoners at Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center, putting some of these prisoners in the hospital, beating some of them, putting them in the hole on restrictive blocks, where to this day, 9 months later, he still sits with none of his belongings, all because of retaliation over a lawsuit, the lawsuit filed in the first place because they refused to allow this person to do anything. Everything, trying to do educational courses, they denied. Trying to get medical help, they denied. To this day, almost 2 years later, still has a torn rotator cuff that has not been addressed. And these are organizations out there, Prison Legal Services, CPCS, all these ACLU, all these organizations that talk about civil rights violations and prison abuse, no one wants to take the case. Why? I don't know. I don't know why they won't take the case. They have taken other cases, similar cases. Some of those cases are not even as severe. So it's targeting as well.
When you're dealing with cases involving prisoner abuse, they don't want to deal with those cases.
But there's also a fact that they don't want to deal with. They're picking and choosing who they want to advocate for. A lot of them are picking and choosing. And I guarantee if they had to show it on paper, you're going to find a lot of people of color not getting the services. You're going to see it.
That's right.
And then you're going to see some of them being targeted because of gossip out there or rumors out there. I'm totally disgusted with our criminal justice system, but I'm also disgusted with a lot of the politicians on the outside that talk about doing so much. They want to do so much to help these prisoners, and yet they're doing nothing. And then you have all these law firms and these lawyers who, especially now that everybody's confined to their homes, you send a letter or an email or something, and they're all on vacation. How can you be on vacation? You're already on vacation because there's a virus, a pandemic. And now they're working from their homes, and yet still while they're working from their homes, they're out until 28th or the 1st of the following month. They're on vacation? We live in a hypocritical country. And you know something? I am so fed up with this country. I wish all I'm saying is that changes need to be made. The public needs to be more aware. And I believe the public is aware. The media is a farce because the media will report something that happens to a prison guard or a police officer, but yet they won't report what causes it. They won't report what these people are going through, whether they be people of color or prisoners or whatever the case may be. They don't report what those people are going through. They're quick to report. If somebody dies, look at all these black men that have been killed by law enforcement. What do? They try to bring up the past, negative past of the people that are being killed. This person had a record, or this person did this, or this person did that. Don't talk about the person, because the person isn't the one that shot anybody. The person is the one that's lying dead by the people that shot them. Find out what they're about. But this is the kind of media we have in this country. This country is a farce. It's a joke. And I agree with every other country that looks at this country, looks down upon this country, because this country is about nothing anymore.
We've been protesting for the last 5 weeks around the federal building. We haven't had one media to come out and talk to us. And we're protesting every Friday. And now when they have cases where officers are beat up by inmates, they have no problem writing about that. But when you're talking about inmates that are being abused by correction officers, they don't want to write anything about that.
Exactly. That's what I was just saying.
And that's what's going on right now. We need people to call into the radio stations, TV stations, the newspapers in Roanoke, WDBJ Channel 7, WSLS Channel 10, WFIR Channel 13. And the Roanoke Times and the Roanoke Tribune newspapers, and talk to these people about why they haven't covered any of our protests. We protest every Friday. We're out in the public. People can see us. We're right around the corner from the newspaper place. Nobody's been out to talk to us about nothing. You know, but we're going to be there. We're not going nowhere. We'll be there every Friday from 1 o'clock, from 1 to 3. Anybody who needs to get in touch with me, my email address is Shahid, S-H-A-H-E-E-D, Omar, O-M-A-R, 69 at yahoo.com. You can get in touch with me. And I also have a Facebook site, Omar Shahid 70. I'm on Facebook. So you can get in touch with me. Again, my telephone number is 540-309-2473. My address is 927 Wasena, Wasena Avenue, Southwest, Apartment 2. That's Roanoke, Virginia. That's Roanoke, VA, 24015. You can touch base with me all day long. If you call me, I'm going to answer my phone. And if you write me, I'm going to return receipt to your letter and talk to you. You ain't got to worry about emailing me or writing me and never hearing from me. I always respond to every letter I get from an inmate. I got a letter right here. This is this right here. I'm going to show you about a letter I got from an inmate the other day. I'm going to respond to it. I can find it here. Let's see. Dear Mr. Omar, I've entered several complaint forms with the policy stating what was violated, and asking for the camera to be preserved. These matters, truth will be revealed. All the responses are lies. The camera footage is reviewed properly to prove me right. I believe that because my issues have so much merit that the warden, Jay Kauser, assistant warden, S. Fuller, are limiting me one grievance in informal complaint forms to
to one per week. But if you read all of these informers, how can a sound mind find them excessive and frivolous? I've also attached affidavits that I have attached to informer complaints and record of grievances, but was never returned to me. Just want the camera to be reviewed. B315, B418 from July to September. And most importantly, look at the responses. They are nowhere near professional. I need all the camera footage to be reviewed, preserved on evidence, so legal remedies be sought. Thank you for your assistance in this matter, and I've heard you on the radio. Mullah, Warriors, you brothers. I, Winston Reed, number, do hereby state the following events took place. The affidavit is made of my own free will under the penalty of law. I, Winston Najib Reed, entered several informal complaints and record grievances with the violation of the procedure at Red Onion State Prison. The warden, Jay Kaiser, and assistant warden, S. Fuller, labeled them excessive and frivolous. Filings are limited me to one grievance and one informal complaint per week. For all these complaints that I have to turn to the next process in the grievance procedure, I'll be time barred and base and lose merit. Due to Red Onion State Prison warden, assistant warden, I'm turning over several informal complaints and record of grievances to be exhausted by Shaheed Omar. What I'll do, I'll make copies of all his complaints, and I will send each complaint to the regional office, and make sure that his complaints are heard. I'll send the judge a copy of all his complaints. I'll send the director of prison a copy of his complaints. I'll send the governor a copy of his complaints.
That's
I'll
right.
Make sure that
he's
heard.
Yeah. Politics.
I'll make sure he's heard. And so they won't be able to deny his accessibility to the public because I make sure he's heard. Yeah, that's what I do. I make sure that he's heard. Yeah. So inmates can write me and send me a copy of their complaint, and I make sure it gets to the right people. God willing, that's what I do. Yeah.
And as I say, even people like Franz Kress, he's been sending me emails from Germany. Look at this. This is about America, the documentary, Growing Up Poor in America, follows three children and their families in the battleground state of Ohio. And it talks about the monies being spent instead of the state spending lots of monies for these sad situations. Instead, the state spends a lot of money for the industrial prison complex. World highest prisoner rate, example for other nations, ? You know, it's almost like people are laughing at this country. What kind of mentality do our citizens of this country have? You know, it's sad because there's so much going on in the penal system. And to see all this going on. Just like someone said, if that was Obama in office, that the first thing that was done, he would have been gone. But we're talking about the penal system. We're talking about all the things going on in this country. We're talking about the vengeance, the retaliation, the racism, everything that's going on to keep mass incarceration. Mass incarceration, even in spite of right now a global pandemic, deadly pandemic. And here, as you mentioned, what prison was that? 400 cases of the coronavirus in one prison?
Right here in Virginia. That's sad. 400 some prisoners. That's right. Right here in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Jeez. I don't know what this country's come to. But I know one thing, prisoners are dying.
We're going to keep on rolling. We're not going to quit. We're going to keep on rolling. And whatever Allah has in store for them, that's what they'll get. But we're going to keep on rolling. We're not going to stop. You know, one thing about the work that I do, I don't stop. I'm not depressed. I'm not going to turn back, wake up. If God wakes me up every day, I'm going to keep on doing this work, you know. And inmates need somebody they can depend on. And when they wake up in the cell, they need somebody they can call. They can call me. And I get called from mates free of charge. They can call me free of charge, you know.
And I accept the charge, call, and will pay for the call. And they can call me. They got my phone number. And again, my number is 540-309-2473. And they can call me or they can write me. 927 Wasino Avenue, Southwest, Apartment 2. It's Roanoke, Virginia, 24015.
And Shahid, if you want to put something on Facebook, even on my Facebook page, and I'll get it shared with all the groups that are out there on Facebook, because a lot of them will probably want to get involved. And if they see what you're doing and you know how to contact you and where they can help in some way, at least it'll be out there. A lot of them will be sharing it as well.
I'll send it to you. No problem. I'll send it
to
you.
Okay. And we'll get that circulated all over Facebook and get others to start working with you. What you're doing is amazing. And I'll tell you, like I said, you've been doing it for a long time. You go way back, and you've had the experience. You could have came out of prison, and you could have gone back into prison, messed up or something, but you took that experience that you had, and you educated yourself. You went to college. You got your master's degree in criminal justice, and you've been going strong since. And I admire you for that. I thank you, too, for being on. We have about three minutes left. So anything you want to talk about, anything more you want to say, please do.
Well, one thing I want to put a plug in is for Kevin Rashid Johnson, right this inmate, in correctional facility in Indiana. Write him, you know, and let him know that you're out here, you heard his name, you heard me bring his name up. Write him, tell him that, you know, that write the governor about him, write the correctional system about him. Let him know that he's not by himself, that there's some people out here that's concerned about him. And we're on top of things. You know, we love him. We appreciate his efforts while he's locked up. And don't turn back. Keep doing what he's doing. You know, and we're going to stay on our job.
Can you give his address?
We're going to do what we're going to do.
Can you give his address again? Give his address again.
His address? Pendleton.
Pendleton
Correctional Facility. I don't know the address, but it's Pendleton Correctional Facility in Indiana. So you can't miss him. You write him. You can't miss him. Look on the internet. Look on the internet, and you'll get it. Pendleton, P-E-N-D-L-E-T. I don't have his number, but it's on the internet. You can get it.
Okay. What is the name again?
Kevin Rashid Johnson.
Okay.
Pendleton Correctional Facility, Kevin Rashid Johnson. Yep, Kevin Rashid Johnson. I might have his number on here somewhere. He wrote a book. It's called Defying the Tomb. Defying the Tomb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Kevin Rashid Johnson, Rashid. He's head of a United Panther movement, prison chapter.
Okay.
Yeah.
If he's on the internet, they'll be able to find it.
Oh, ain't no doubt about it. Ain't no doubt about it. I'm looking at it right now. You'll be able to find it. Yeah, he got a lot of stuff on the internet. Plus, he writes. He's written many, many, many articles about many, many things. In the prison, outside the prison. He writes very well. A lot of writing. I'm looking at 20, 30, 40, 50 articles that he's written on everything. So he writes very well. And he has a book out that he's written since he's been in prison.
We'll have to have you back on for an update, a follow-up from this in a couple of weeks, a few weeks, Shahid. So if you would like to come back on, we'd love to have you back on and maybe pick up on where you left off here.
Yeah, we'll do that in the future. I'll let you know when I want to come back. We'll do that in the future.
Okay, that'll be good. And I want to thank you once again. And everyone, you've heard from Shahid. You can listen to this for the addresses he's been giving out, for the information he's been giving out on how to contact him, and you can actually get in contact with him. And also, we'll be sharing things on Facebook. Once Shahid, join him, try to help out in any way. It doesn't matter if you're from Virginia or not. Everybody's doing things virtual now, so you can do it right from your home, right from your virtual meetings or whatever you might have. But contact Shahid Omar get in contact with him, talk to him about ways you can help. And I thank you once again, Shahid, for being on with us. And we are going to be signing off now. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Okay. Bye-bye.